It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, from about 1960 to 1990, the era is sometimes called a golden age for serial killers, with hundreds of new active killers each decade. We talked to an investigative historian about why that happened and why serial killers are way less common today. First, new data from federal courts show that the number of farmers seeking Chapter 12 bankruptcy protection reached its highest point in a decade last year. While 2008's recession had a big impact on farms back then, a host of factors pushed farmers to seek bankruptcy even in better economic times. Wisconsin farmers in particular are bearing the brunt of low commodity prices and an ongoing international trade dispute, which is impacting their operations and finances. Our next guest is here to talk about the issues facing Wisconsin farmers and potential solutions. Mike North is the president and founder of the Platteville-based Commodity Risk Management Group. Mike, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back with you.
Well, we have this news about bankruptcy filings last year. We're just hearing in the news today an increase in the default rate on farm loans. What do you make of these numbers, Mike?
Well, it's been a trend that's been in place for the last several years, especially as you look at western Wisconsin. Lots of pressure in our state, obviously, because of the presence of the dairy industry. The dairy industry has felt the brunt of low commodity prices more than really any sector has across the spectrum of agriculture. And as we observe here in Wisconsin, the impacts of that, it has led largely to this increase of bankruptcies versus some other states. So there was some data that came out of Ohio State not too long ago that showed that the number of bankruptcies here in Wisconsin were more than double of the next closest state. Nebraska had 17, Minnesota had 9, New York had 15. Wisconsin really truly stands out, and I think it's largely a function of the presence, the denser populace of dairy farmers in our state versus some of the surrounding states.
We'll dig more into that in just a bit. I want to talk about what it means to file for bankruptcy. It doesn't, for farmers or any other business operation, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going out of business. What does a Chapter 12 bankruptcy filing mean?
Well, I'm no banker, but a lot of times when you go through this process, you have the opportunity to reorganize your business in a way where you're securing the debts that are attached to the operation. There are some unsecured creditors that obviously have exposure in that process, and frankly, it allows you to come back out of some of that debt burden and back into your operation without the challenges that the debt poses in the operation prior to that point. But, you know, as it sits, you know, you're seeing a lot more of those at the onset. Guys are really trying to work it out. Let's face it, the farm crowd is not one to walk away from responsibility. And, you know, as you talk through the different processes, if they can figure out a path forward, they're going to.
And we're seeing farmers this time of year, they're looking, hopefully have already secured loans for the coming season, with some in default, some with high debts. This is a challenging time. Some of those farmers aren't getting the loans they want this time of year. Is that right?
Yeah, there's lots of those stories out there. I can tell you, I think that the storyline is bigger than what reality is, but it is for a fact it is happening. There are some farmers that are not getting their operating notes, which that is a real issue as we come into spring and farmers are securing seed and fertilizer and paying their rents and any other obligations that they have in order to get the next crop in the ground. Without that operating money, that ground is likely to be planted by somebody else this year.
Talking to Mike North, president and founder of the Platteville-based Commodity Risk Management Group, talking about increased filings for bankruptcy among farmers, especially here in Wisconsin. Mike, let's get back to that point you touched on earlier, low commodity milk prices. Can you talk about what we've seen in recent years?
So everyone likes to go back to the year 2014. At that point, we set the largest prices in history with regard to milk. At that same time, we also had very high feed costs because, as you recall, we were coming off of the 2012 drought. Feed costs were still very high. Even though they were working lower, they were, you know, much higher than they are today. So farmers went through a very interesting period in 2014 with milk prices that were at $24. In the very next calendar year, we were down to $16 and $17 prices. And in the years since, we've seen a lot of prices closer to $14 to $15, some as low as $12.76. And in that environment, the amount of profitability on the farm has not only been compressed, but in many cases been inverted. And so there's been losses experienced by dairymen for 3 and 4 years as we've moved through the last few. That takes away all of the equity gains that might have been experienced in the years that led up to this and really puts dairymen in a very difficult spot, because dairying is not an industry that you just get into and then easily get out of. You have a lot of capital expense on the front end. Cows don't just give milk today and not tomorrow. You know, it's a process of bringing, you know, calves up through their stages being heifers and into the barn as a productive cow. So it's a long-term commitment, and it's very difficult as you've gone through these last few years to look forward over the next few and ask the question, do I want to continue to make that commitment on the hope that things are going to change?
What's driving the lower milk commodity prices?
Well, we've had a number of things that have led into it. The higher prices that were experienced really in that run from 2011 through 2014 was spurred by a lot of growth in global demand. And the American farmer here in Wisconsin, of course, among our dairymen, they rose to the occasion, and supply grew to meet that new and growing demand. And then, of course, we saw a tumble in prices. Some of that can be attributed to the fact that we were coming out from under the quantitative easing that had preceded that following the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009. We saw, at that point, general compression across all agricultural prices. As a result of that change in our fiscal and monetary policy, ultimately we've had supply build at a rate coming out of 2014 that grew beyond demand in a market where prices were being compressed by other forces. And now on top of that, we have an issue with trade with some of our key partners as a result of tariff. As you talk about Mexico, which is the number one buyer of product, they are not buying the processed cheese that they had before. And so we've seen barrel cheese prices at the exchange and around the country become compressed because that partner has been minimalized due to tariffs. And their response essentially to our steel and aluminum tariff was a retaliatory tariff on U.S. cheese. So that will stand even with the newly constructed USMCA, which replaces the old NAFTA arrangement. Obviously, China has been in the news a lot. They have been a very big buyer of U.S. dairy products, and that is also an issue that we're trying to work through. And we all hope, again, that this can be rectified, that we will get a deal, and as we move into these next several months, we'll move back towards a normal flow of trade with those partners. But that has also helped backlog supply into our domestic market. And unfortunately, the American consumer, just because prices are cheap, they're not going to rush in and buy exponentially more product. It's not that elastic. So that is a real challenge for us as we go forward. And the only way in this environment to necessarily try to bring balance back to the market is to reduce supply. And part of what we've watched in terms of bankruptcies has started to move the conversation towards finding that balance, but it's a very unfortunate path to have to take to strike a balance in our market.
We're talking to Mike North right now, president and founder of the Platteville-based Commodity Risk Management Group. He's with us to talk about What could be contributing to the growing number of farm bankruptcies filed in Wisconsin and throughout the Midwest? You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest about how all this works? Are you a farmer yourself who's been impacted by low commodity prices, maybe by these trade issues with places like Mexico and China? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up a conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about the rise in bankruptcy filings among farmers in the Midwest, especially Wisconsin. Mike North is with us, president and founder of the Platteville-based Commodity Risk Management Group. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're a farmer, have you been impacted by the economy, by trade and tariff issues? Have you been driven out of farming or some part of your operation? What would you like to see change when it comes to agriculture and policy? And do you have questions for our guest? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll go to your calls now. Tom is with us in Port Wing. Tom, hello.
Hello. I have a question about changing some of the laws in Wisconsin or nationwide in regards to the direct sale of milk and meat, especially for the smaller operations. You know, it becomes cost prohibitive to directly market the stuff. And, you know, a person can go into a tavern and get a shot of whiskey, but I couldn't sell a gallon of milk unpasteurized to somebody. To me, it didn't seem right. But like any ideas on changing the laws.
Tom, thanks for the call. Mike, I mean, we do see farmers, you know, selling meat and dairy products sometimes at farmers markets. Tom, they're talking about unpasteurized milk, which is a long-running controversy here in the state. Are those things that can make a difference between going into the red and going into the black for farmers?
You know, there's certainly been lots of chatter about, you know, the raw milk issue, right? You do see farm marketed products made available in a lot of local venues like farmers markets. The raw milk issue has always been a real challenge, and several bills have been introduced and put forward there. But it seems almost every time that such a bill is put forward, somewhere inside the state, there's, you know, a group of kids that got sick from a gallon of milk brought from the farm to a party, and kids just didn't have the bacterial exposure to make them able to maintain the immunity to the bacteria. Ultimately, it's been shut down many times, and you know, there's some philosophical discussions that surround that, but economically we often find that it doesn't bring enough benefit you know, to have a few sales in that regard to offset the overall condition of the farm economy.
Right, so, if you're selling hundreds of gallons of milk at very low prices, selling tens of gallons of raw milk maybe isn't going to balance that out.
That's a fact. That's a fact.
Thanks for that call, Tom. We'll go now to Jeff in Superior. Jeff, hello.
Hello. For 7 years, I was a hired man, and I worked for various farmers in Wisconsin and Minnesota. So we produce milk for AMPI, Mid-America, NFO, and Land O'Lakes, various farms. And it was my experience that these milk producers would purchase milk from farmers at lower and lower cost because they, in turn, would sell the milk to cheese producers who wanted low cost for their commodity to make their cheese. So the competition was for lower prices among the cheese producers, but they wanted to charge the highest price, whatever the market would bear, for their cheese, for their product. So what I see is a disparity between the consumer perception that, well, farmers are getting a lot of money because the cheese is so expensive, when in fact the opposite is true. I wonder if you could talk about that.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Mike?
So when we look at how milk is actually priced in this country, it's a very interesting process. We take the wholesale sales of product from the processor to the end user. Those are reported back to the USDA. The USDA publishes that data weekly, and then those prices across the weeks of a given month are put into a formula that then puts a value on butterfat, protein, and other solids in the milk. That then is distilled down and used in a formula to calculate what the value of milk price is. So the circle is such that the price of product drives the value of milk, and that sits inside of this federal order system that we use to define what the value of milk is. Now, what happens then at the retail level is a completely different discussion. And, you know, certainly there has been talk over time about, you know, how we could maybe capture some of that value, and is some of the value in product that's being realized at the retail level, you know, can we tap into that and pull it back to the farm gate level? Lots of those discussions have been had. That is certainly not materialized, but, you know, frankly, you can't necessarily have a runaway in product price without a correlating increase in farm price. Our challenge right now is that we're stuck with a bunch of inventory, and buyers just aren't in a place to continue to pay more for that product because there's an abundance of it out there. And frankly, processors have to work through that same problem. And as a result, it's put a drag on the milk price.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Mike North with the Commodity Risk Management Group based in Platteville, looking at the challenges facing farmers, especially dairy farmers here in Wisconsin. Back to your calls. Hugo is with us in Marion. Hugo, hello.
Hello there.
What'd you want to bring up, Hugo?
Well, I'm a cheese salesman, and I used to be a dairy farmer, and I work for a small dairy up in Marion, Wisconsin, called DuPont Cheese. And I do a lot of the store promotions, and one of the things that I've really noticed over the years is the big influx of all the different flavored milks that are coconut milk and almond milk and cashew milk, hemp oatmeal, all these different milks, plus all the creamers, which actually doesn't have any dairy in it. That's what all the consumers are buying. The fluid milk used to be where the dairy farmer would get his money out of the extra money out of it. And I think that's just kind of fallen to the wayside now when we're competing against all these other ones. And they shouldn't even be called milk. I've never seen an almond milk.
Hugo, thanks for the call. Mike, is competition from non-dairy milks, I'll throw quotes around it for Hugo, hurting demand for dairy?
Well, it's certainly been a challenge, right? And if you look at the rules and regs at USDA, by the rules, these particular products should not be called milk, period. That's the rules. Milk comes from a lactating animal. That's the definition. And last time I checked, almonds are not lactating. The reality is, as we talk about these particular products, this is where it's important for the consumer to really dig in and understand what their products are made out of. And frankly, when we talk about milk, I agree, it should be, as it's defined by USDA, from a lactating animal. You know, really, as we go forward, it becomes a question of enforcement. Will the USDA do it? And there's been some bills that have been put forward to try to essentially bring enforcement to the rule. He's right. You know, if it says milk, it should be milk, and that's where there's an opportunity for milk to move back into that picture and service the need of the consumer. If the consumer wants a beverage that's made from a nut, that is fine, but we shouldn't mask the fact that the package says milk and inside the package there's no milk.
Thanks for the call, Hugo. Michelle joins us next in Dodgeville. Michelle, hello.
Hi. I had a question. Just wanted your guest feedback. I feel like dairy farmers don't have much bargaining power. Their input costs are dictated to them, and then their output is the prices for those things are also dictated to them. So I feel like farmers are kind of caught in the middle. So I was wondering if your guest could comment or have any insight on that.
What do you think, Mike?
Well, there's certainly some truth to that, in the sense that when we talk about inputs at the farm level, your largest one is feed, your second one is labor, and then there's overhead that comes with that. And in an environment where you can raise your own feed, you're going to pay the price of whatever fertilizer is and whatever the nutrients are for your crop. You're going to have to pay your labor whatever the going rate is. It's tough to find special deals there. On the flip side, with regard to revenue, there is a system in place that was put forward to help protect farmers with regard to the value of their milk, because it's not like grain. You know, with grain, you can put it in the bin and defer your sale till later, but milk is a perishable commodity, and if you don't have a buyer at that point, the risk of not having that buyer is greater than the risk of having a buyer that may not give you everything you want with regard to price. And so there's a balance that has to be struck there. Is it a challenge? Most certainly. And there's been a lot of debate as to how we arrive at the value of milk. Is the system that we have today still applicable? Do we need to go back and reevaluate, you know, what products are a part of that formulation as we look for value in butter, fat, and protein? And what does that translate to in a value for milk price? Certainly lots of those discussions, but when it comes to pay price, we have a system that was put forward in a very thoughtful manner to make sure that there was always a market for milk, because you can't just store the stuff. You can't put it in a bin and wait to sell it next spring. It's got to go to town today, and that requires a system that some will disagree with, but nonetheless a system that provides a market on a daily basis.
Thanks for that call. Briefly, Mike, as we wrap up, the size of farms that are filing for bankruptcy or going out of business, is there a sense that it's the smaller farms that are taking the biggest hits?
You know, I think there's a lot of those discussions and a lot of those thoughts, but it's shared by everyone. We're seeing larger farms leave, mid-sized farms leave, smaller farms leave. Everybody's situation is a bit unique, right? What kind of debt structure did they have when they came into it? What kind of facilities do they have? Have they been depreciated over time? Is there still value in them? You know, there's lots of different discussions, and it's not a size discussion. It's shared by all different sizes of producers. The bottom line here is that we have had low milk prices. We have had, you know, compressed and inverted profits at the farm level. And because Wisconsin has such a large dairy industry relative to some of our neighbors, we do stand out as having more of these bankruptcies of late as compared to some of the neighboring states, because the dairy industry has felt that pressure more than any other space in terms of different commodity producers.
Mike, we'll leave it there. Thanks to Mike North, president and founder of the Platteville-based Community Risk Management Group, with us to talk about an increase in bankruptcy filings by farmers in Wisconsin in 2018. Coming up, we'll talk with a guest who has a theory for why so many serial killers were active from the 1960s to the late 90s. Not so much today. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.